Hello, this is a podcast series where I explain scientific terms for my class at high school. I won't say what's high school, it's a high school up in Western Sydney. And this time I'm going to delve into the topic, the much used topic of models, what a scientific model is. And I think you can well imagine many people have seen models of atoms, of DNA, those physical models. But the term scientific model has sort of almost it's got a scientific term with it. So this is Peter Hill Explains, where I, Peter Hill, will talk about things scientific. So before we get into models, let's talk about so the idea of a model, M-O-D-E-L, is a sort of one of the more reserved scientific terms. It's a very basic scientific term. And I just want to get into the idea of these scientific terms, some of the key concepts in science, because people who say, look, we want to teach conceptually, just start to pick concepts and say, look, if we look at a concept and that's a good way to explore science. So specifically, we've got two programs, which is a bill of lessons, a structure of work to get through in a coordinated way to make sure we cover multiple streams of science, cover the same basic areas and the same sort of themes. So it standardizes experience across the school. Different science teachers teach the same program. Our programs have been moved towards the idea of covering major concepts, and this is quite successful in pulling teachers back from direct teaching and allowing some more innovative teaching to happen. And the concepts we've looked at is for Year 7, change, and discussing what change is and how science interacts with that as a way of creating a spinal backbone into the way we look at things. For Year 8, we're looking at first-term relationships, how one body of things, one object is related to another, and understanding that as a lens through which you look at things at a high conceptual level. So if you teach conceptually, you are almost bound to enter at a level such that you can probe into these subjects at a higher level. Now, of course, we have to get some basic skills across and some basic information across as well at the same time, so that we teach the basics and the structures, the literacy of the subject, as well as a pathway to more advanced thinking. And I suppose psychologically we want to make people expand the avenues with which someone can actually access some ideas. Now, as a scientist, having myself worked in fields like gravity waves and quantum physics and robotics, there are obviously some advantages to thinking in terms of these terms, but as you really read into it, there are some other terms which are really core and central to science. And it's one of these terms, sort of background terms, is models, M-O-D-E-L-S, models. And that's not really a conceptual term, it's a tool, a conceptual tool that we use. But for sure, if you had to write down a series of concepts, big sweeping concepts on the page, there are ones which you would identify as a scientist as being very important, and pull them apart, and people who weren't scientific would argue with you, saying, oh, look, they're not as important. One of the things, I suppose, when arguing with you is that they all definitely have set up not to listen to you in the first place. Fortunately, this is a podcast and I can rant and rave all that I want. Now, there are two key terms which I want to add to models. And they're more broader terms. One is the term pattern. So a pattern. So when I have some information and it has a rule or a story to it, my brain or intellect perceives a pattern. So just as data exists in the real world, my recording of data onto a book is my sort of intellectual possession of it, and the experience of an order of nature is a pattern. So the recognition of patterns is key and foremost to the functioning of science. Now, where this wasn't so clear, if you look at the 1960 science, patterns wouldn't be so important. Nowadays, it's highly important. We look for patterns in data. We look for patterns in life, in populations. We look for patterns in DNA. DNA is an enormously interesting patterns. And we look for patterns in signals, like for gravity waves. So we're looking for certain patterns there. And to actually pick out a pattern. Now, patterns, of course, obviously exist in artificial intelligence. It's there within the data, but you have to perceive it. And so we really have got the low-hanging fruit, the very obvious things. The less obvious things, we have to really think about it, and we pick out as patterns. So patterns, so we have the ideas of change in relationships, but patterns and pattern recognition is really key to understanding in science. So obviously, if you have a pattern, you want to produce a model which has that pattern and actually think a little bit further forward. We're going to go into exactly what a model is by the end of this podcast. The other aspect in science is significance. Significance is significant. Significance is that I've seen a pattern. Gone through and actually produced by experiment a picture which corresponds with a pattern that I have seen. And you have to ask these three levels of significance, the mathematical significance of it. So, and that corresponds with an earlier idea of reliability. I've got some a pattern, I've perceived a pattern. How can I be sure that pattern is mathematically significant? I can repeat it. I can look at the variation of it. There's another mathematical significance. There's evidential significance. So this is coming well from, again, I suppose, very much in gravity wave research, that if I can actually have a model which produces that pattern, I can say that that pattern is evidence of something, and then that corresponds very much with the pre-pattern way of discussing things with validity. So if I see a pattern, is that pattern evidence of what I think, or does that more relate to the type of experiment that I set up? So am I being fooled by it? Is the evidence before me significant? So if I see someone eating chocolate every lunchtime, can I say that is that pattern that I observe, eating every lunchtime, is evidence that they are addicted to chocolate? And you can keep on asking that sort of question. The other thing is, from an education and I suppose orientation idea, is the social significance. So is the evidence significant to you? You may not have realized this previously, so you've just seen something for the first time, and that now that allows you to grow. So there's sort of an educational significance of something. There can be a social significance. So if you have transmitted a radio wave between two points, depending on your time point in history, this can be very significant. So it can be significant in the way that it's been the first time it's done, and it's opened up the new world of radio communication. Or it can be significant in that that's a new way of transmitting information. So there's a whole range of social significance. So we've got patterns and significance as what I would call higher level concepts, because when you break them apart, you get down to the other concepts which we use in relation to other concepts. So, say if you're looking at relationships or a change, you have experimental method, and people tend to use the old terms of reliability and validity. So it's sort of like a conceptual hygiene, a way of going into a situation where you target certain things first because they unlock many more doors. So if you imagine you're playing a board game, there are certain things that you want to get first because then that enables you to do a whole lot of other things. So people who are playing electronic games, they know that there are certain ways of doing things which give you a strategy. So strategically, the concepts to get on top of are patterns and significance. Those two things together will get you very, very far in science. But we come today to discuss, at 10 minutes in, as is ideal, from my ranting and raving, the idea of models. Now, what I want to do, you should stop the podcast now for a time and actually have a discussion about what you think a model is. But there's the real thing. So there's a real cyclone, or there is a real infection killing someone, or there is a real parrot giving birth through little eggs or whatever. There is a real UV damage by UV rays coming through. They're real things. You can actually feel them. So you've got the actual real thing. It might be the real car, or it may be the real petrol used in a car. They're the real things. Now, then there are things where we actually don't want to drag out all the grizzly bears and line them up end to end to discuss what we're talking about. So when we're actually not got the real thing, but we are using a conceptual representation, we're talking about a model. So you can actually, for the word model, you could interchange it with the word representation. So this is something which represents a real thing. So that's a basic definition of a model. A model is something that represents a real thing. Now, the advantage of a model is that I can produce a whole lot of them. I can, if I want to have a model of a car, I can just produce lots and lots of them. I can test the model, and I can use the model as a communication tool. So, say if I've got a car, and it's been in a car crash, I'm in a court, I can explain to the court what's going on by actually holding up a little toy car and showing it crashing into another car. We can see by having a look at it. So if you like to say, if I've got a model house, your view of that model house is if you are up in the sky looking over the top. It gives you a whole lot of other advantages by being smaller, lighter, being able to be lifted up. And it's, it is a representation which allows you to show the relationships between objects within that actual theme. So, to recap, a model is just a representation, and it's a representation for conceptual use. So it's rather than the actual thing, I have a model, which is a representation, and I use it for all the things I use concepts for. That is to vary it, to communicate it, to elucidate, to explain, all those sorts of things. Now, in the category of models, we can actually cut them down. The most obvious thing is, if anyone has ever had a toy is a model. It allows us to play with the concept. So when you're playing with a toy car, you're playing with the concept of a car. And so you can drive the car along and then voice act an accident or ownership or buying the car. You can voice act or play with it. And so they're physical models. Say a teddy bear is a model of a bear, and it allows us to speak to it, speak to its head and do various things and move that concept and add that concept. So a concept of a teddy bear has now had some origin with an actual bear, but now has origins, links with culture, the teddy bear, as other models of the teddy bear. So you have Winnie the Pooh teddy bear, that is a model of another model of a teddy bear. That is a model several degrees, but it's showing the naivety of a model. So the way you treat a model actually tells you a lot about the person operating. So we're pretty smart as humans. So models are representations, but also models can be physical things. They can also be abstract things. So it's something which doesn't have a weight, is one way of describing an abstract thing, or a thought. So going back to Winnie Pooh, the Winnie the Pooh as described in the book is an abstract bear. It has got features because I have described them in an abstract way. So that's an abstraction. Say from the military background, if you operating in an area, you'll make a mud map, which is a physical model of what's going on, you have your actual map. So if you've got hills, you will get some dirt, and you will actually get the dirt and remold the landscape and make little twigs as various groups to explain what people are doing. And you have your soldiers around, and you say, today we're doing this, this, and this. And at the end of it, you must also get with your boot, kick over the model, so not to leave intelligence. People can then take that area, look at your mad map, and work out what you were thinking, or how much you know, or what you thought. A map is a model. It's beginning to be towards an abstract model. Let's say in your phone, you have a map, a GPS of an area, and that is a picture or representation of where you want to go, and it's showing you the relationships between streets, so you can actually plan your route on your phone, on the model of your phone, and plan your route outside. And so it can be progressively more abstract. Now, the models start to intersect. Models are made from a library of tools, where you have, say, streets and rules and all that type of stuff is a group of abstract toolbox or components of your model which you can take across. So people will understand the tools of an abstract model, and you can actually port those across and build your model conceptually out of pre-agreed conventional tools. So if I say the word street, people automatically know what that refers to. So in summary, you've got your concrete model, you have your abstract models. So an abstract model might be the greenhouse effect. So you have a concrete greenhouse, and we then abstract it to a more abstract level. And of course that corresponds to a real physical thing, which is the gas in the atmosphere, which acts as, if you would like, a glass sheet, which admits visible light but holds in or absorbs infrared light which comes along. So there's those two models, but we have another category of models. There are three categories of models, and that's a mathematical model. So a mathematical model is where I, in my tool shed, describe a high-level thing and describe a relationship between components of my abstract model. I put them across to a special tool shed, construct them together, and put those components together with mathematical operators. So one way of doing it is multiplication. So I can work out how old I am in months by the number of years I am, and multiplying that by 12, and then adding additional to that. And that's a mathematical operation, which I do on abstract data. Another mathematical model would be to look at the cooling of a beaker over time, and so I can create, and the beaker itself may be a model of a much larger pool or some other aspect, and I take the information and I have a conceptual representation of that beaker, and it's on a graph, and I can actually model that information and use my model to infer the temperature in between the points that I measure. Inasmuch that when I point to a graph and say that is a graph of that real thing, the moment I say that is a graph of a real thing, if you say that's of a real thing, that makes it a model. Now, let's get a bit further into it. As you go older, your models are more sophisticated. And as we've become a civilization, our models require more sophisticated information. Now, typically, the way that we, a scientist would start to have a more sophisticated and less naive model. And so the teaching of science is basically upgrading our models. So a young child, for instance, will see the sun rise and have the model that people had in ancient civilizations, that the sun was actually physically moving through the sky, and we replace that with other models. Now, there are different ways that we can do it. We can just basically shout at people and say, this is a model, this is what you've got to listen, and you'll be left out. Or we can actually talk people through to say, we understand that you believe that, but would you like to see how your model compares, and have you seen it from different viewpoints? It's much easier if people walk across and develop their models. So one aspect of science is a storehouse of agreed quality models. So if I use a scientific model and I use scientifically agreed terms, that's recognized throughout the world. You're not going to have a problem. So if I use standard temperature and use standard things, people ask a lot less questions. It's sort of like the McDonald's of you're going out to a restaurant. If you go out to McDonald's, you know exactly what you're getting. So if you're using a scientific model, you by using conventions being pumped into it, you can use the scientific community. It's an international language. Now, often scientists will stop you and say, look, we'll use degrees Celsius, we'll use meters, we'll do this. And people say, well, I understand my model just as well using feet and degrees Fahrenheit and I don't know, other time units and stuff like that. I'm comfortable using it, and it works as a model for me. The idea is that a scientific model works in the scientific community, and it meets certain standards and has certain ways that it's represented. And it's not that it's better, it's just that people find it easier to check, and it corresponds with other models. You can check it very, very quickly. You can, because everyone is using the same. It's sort of like everyone is speaking the same language. So let's recap what we've done so far. The approach to science does have an optimal approach. So you can approach, there's a good education idea to use concepts and use concept-led learning, because it allows people to transition very easily to higher levels, allows gifted people to operate very well. However, science has a favoured route, and that favoured route involves the idea of patterns, the significance of patterns, and also the use, the nuances. Nuances means the subtleties of models, because models, like, it's like a scientific language. It's our language of science, and it's very much alive, and the accuracy of scientific communication becomes following the conventions of models. So a model is a very, very important thing in science because it allows us to move away from the naive worrying, or allows us to generalize. It's a model is very much a generalization. It allows the power of science. So if I build one model car, it actually can represent all model cars, and allows us to communicate and educate, because I can now, rather than taking a student out to showing them the actual physical car door, I can actually show them a picture of a car door. It's any representation of a real thing is a model, and the clarity of your language, the clarity of your words, it's like a word in scientific thought, in scientific language. It's your definition of what you mean by something is your meaning and precision of what you talk about goes through models. So in terms of our conceptual journey, concepts are good, but there are some concepts which are above the key concepts in science, which allow you to access other things and allows you to access the machinery of science. So you're more precise. Concepts can invite you to use machinery, but there are some concepts linked into the machinery which allows you to operate that machinery very well. And part of the machinery of science is models, and that's why we talk about it. And in Year 9, we have the particle model. So that's the particle model is not a particular model of particles. It refers to the library of ideas which I can pick up and produce a model. So that's a bit of a difference. We probably need a new word for it. So the particle model refers to atoms, motion, relative distance between particles, and how those particles behave. They're all that concept in the library of the particle model. So we can build from that library a functional model of any particular situation. So the particle model refers to the general library of ideas that we can go to model gas inside a balloon, water inside a beaker, or atoms inside a brick or something solid. Similarly, the other model that we're looking at is the wave model. So the wave model is a group, a library of concepts, ideas that we can pull together to actually start to describe a particular wave in a system. And so in our description of a wave, we build up a model of it. So by actually drawing a model, can obviously another aspect of a model is a concept, so I can squish it down. Generalize that and squish it down. So I can draw a model of a 1 meter wave by drawing it as a scale model, and I can actually draw that's a 1 meter wavelength sound wave, and I can draw it on a page, and I may not be able to draw the compression and rear refraction of the sound increasing, but I can draw a representation which shows that I understand. I can show a line going up to show the compression, a line going down to show the rarefaction. So I can draw a sound wave using a model, and the model, as it achieves simplicity and communication, moves further and further away from the actual thing. So the aim of a model is to communicate, and communicate specific things, but there are things that gaining that it doesn't. So models, besides being part of the conceptual machinery and built from a model library, they're built aiming to do particular things well. So if you can imagine a compare of a show, the front person of a show is different from the researcher who goes down and thinks about every concept. So if you can think of a model more like a show compare, an announcer of an idea, it gets the general idea across, the news announcement across, but you have to back that up with solid analysis. But the solid analysis and the detail is really not popular. It's not the news headline to show what's going on. And so really you have to pack your model with link it to a discussion showing the deep analysis and research, the limitations of a model. So Part of the thing of science, the competency of science, is using the correct terms on a model from the library, universally accepted, that I use a meter, someone else also uses a meter, so there's no difference in there. But then once you've used the model, you have to then put a product disclaimer saying this is only a model, this is how it works, and so you have to actually write and describe your model to actually build a link between your model and the real thing in front of you. So you may have a model of a cat, and it's a picture of a cat, and it's a picture on the page, but you may want to say to the people, look, this is a cat, but this cat is not going to live very long, so even though it's drawn on my page alive, by the time you read this, I know that may not be the nicest thing for cat owners, but you have to actually start to have a conversation showing your scientific understanding. So your science, your model is like a compare, an announcer for an idea, but then you have to, for the scientific audience, stand in there as a PR for that model and actually negotiate what that model means in real life. So I hope that has a help to you. And now the idea for this is these podcasts roughly half an hour to 40 minutes, which is generally your journey home amount of time to listen to it. And the idea is that you then go on the internet, look up the word model, go into your textbook, look up the word model, use it a few times in the assignment, and then perhaps after you've thought about it a while, come back and listen to this podcast a second time, or listen to this podcast with friends and discuss the weaknesses of it. And when you really come to think of it, this podcast, this is a bit deep for everyone, is a model of models. It builds the concept of what a model is without physically having a model in front of you. So I have actually made a representation of the models by discussing it there. It goes in a long, long way, and as you move a model of a model, you can actually bring different ideas, different concept groups together, cultural concept, the physical concepts, and bring it together. So it's a very powerful, unifying skill, the skill of model making and the skill of model use and the skill of model presentation, where you present it to an audience really quickly and you present it to a critical audience differently by discussing it later on. Okay, that's all for tonight in Peter Hill Explains. In the meantime, keep on doing science.